Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello, hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. We're going to dive into how the diet industry lied to us, how they continue to grab our attention with fad diets and marketing tactics. Not that I think that marketing by any stretch of the imagination is bad, it's really just persuasion, but really how to identify these kind of common scenarios or common strategies that are used by this multi-trillion dollar industry to keep us as customers, keep us coming back, keep us thinking like we are getting results or we're moving forward, or that there's a new fix or a new option, when instead we go year after year feeling frustrated, never losing the weight, feeling like more and more like we're a failure and there's something wrong with either our minds or our bodies. And that's not okay, because the answer is in fact incredibly simple. It's just not easy to implement, like nothing is, but there's ways we can make it easier. So I've thought about six or seven things that are really common overarching themes of the diet industry. We're going to go over what they are so that you can look out for them as you are scrolling social media, Instagram, which is social media, duh, I don't know why I said that. Anything online, whenever you are presented with this in books, or you're Googling something, whenever you're having a conversation with someone, whenever you're looking on YouTube, these kind of things come up all the time. And once you identify them, you're going to have a really great filter for knowing whether something is legit or not. And you're also going to know what to do instead. So let's get in, dive in head first into the episode. The first and most prevailing lie of the diet industry is that there's some kind of secret to weight loss. That it's keto or it's paleo, or there's some kind of blood test that you need to do. You need to eat for your body type, or you need to do some kind of intermittent fasting. And it's at the point where there's so much out there in terms of what you could do to lose weight that it seems incredibly complicated and difficult to know who to trust. The reality is that there isn't a secret to weight loss. If you were to go and read any kind of scientific paper about comparing different types of weight loss approaches, be that keto or high carb, or any kind of judgment on whether it's better to eat your calories in the morning or eat your calories at night, and comparing intermittent fasting with different types of eating, anytime that you were to actually look at this from a perspective of trying to interpret which is better, aka some kind of clinical trial, something where you're actually measuring, you will notice that those papers will always talk about calories and a calorie deficit and comparing how much weight was lost on different types of calorie amounts, or how calories were absorbed. The answer is very simple, in that if we want to lose weight, we must be in a calorie deficit. And you've probably been so tired of me saying this, but I'm going to reiterate this because it really is the biggest thing that caught me out for many, many years. And I wasn't drawn into traditional fads in terms of low carb or keto. Keto wasn't around when I was actively dieting, as far as I know. Probably Atkins was more what people tried to do, but I still did some kind of version of low carb or like raw till 4, which I'm going to put in the same kind of category. And something you'll notice with the diet industry is most of the time there is a blatant disregard for calories in, calories out. And this law of thermodynamics, which it, when I say law, like this is not like the law of attraction. I annoyed a couple of people in a few episodes back when I talked about, I'm not a fan of the law of attraction. And like I stand by that. I'm really not, partly because it's proposed as a law when it's very, very hard to say that anything in the scientific community is a law. You need undeniable, consistent proof for something to become a law. Like there cannot be a single thing that could possibly contradict that. It has to be tested over and over again. If there is a shred of evidence that could possibly contradict a scientific law, it is no longer a scientific law, it is a hypothesis. And so something like gravity is considered a law because we don't have any instances where that is not true. Something like thermodynamics or entropy, in that the world is moving to a state of chaos, it moves from order to chaos. These are laws. Even something like evolution is called a theory. It's not called a scientific law. So if the law of thermodynamics states that energy can neither be created or destroyed, it has to go somewhere, which is the entire premise of calories in, calories out, that if you want to remove those stored fat cells, you need to eat less energy, aka calories. Calories are just a unit of energy. You need to be eating less calories than what your body actually needs to survive. And then because it has to pull it from somewhere, it must pull it from somewhere, otherwise you die. It pulls that, the energy it needs, from the stored fat cells. That's why you have them. Those are your rainy day funds. So there's no one who can escape that. There's no one who somehow has got this superhuman power where they're immune to the law of thermodynamics. There's no one who has entered some kind of starvation mode, or they've dieted so often that now if they eat less calories than they need, they gain weight. That is not conceivably possible. There is no one where if they eat less calories than they need, whether they come from Twinkies or they come from carbohydrates or they've got high insulin or they've got metabolic problems, there is not a single person, be you someone who is going through menopause, there's not a single person that is immune to that law because it is a law of energy. So when you read these scientific papers, this is going to be language, calories in, calories out, that is talked about by default, because no one is, in terms of this being true, there's no one that is arguing it. Like we can't argue this fact. So when it comes to understanding how weight loss works, it's really important to recognize every single diet on the planet works in the same way. They all work by reducing our overall calorie consumption or increasing the amount of calories that we burn, changing that balance in some kind of way. And so these different diets just do it in slightly different ways. If you're going to be on a keto diet, for example, one of the things fascinating about any diet where you're omitting entire food groups is that you tend to eat less calories overall. So this is how something like the potato reset works as well, where you're eating only potatoes or only potatoes with non-starchy vegetables. As soon as you're in a position where if you're on keto and you're eating, let's say you're not vegan, you're eating mostly meat, and the option to have a cookie with a cup of tea is there for an afternoon snack, rather than going and cooking yourself a lard of bacon, I don't know, that's not a thing, a pan full of bacon, more often than not, you're simply just going to avoid eating because the effort required to do that, rather than just eat the cookie and have a cup of tea or have a sandwich, is too great. So this is how those kind of diets work. And I notice this a lot on any kind of restricted or food restricted diet. And when I say restricted, it's not a negative use of the word. It just means that there's some things that you're omitting from your diet. not all restriction is terrible. I massively restrict drugs and alcohol in my life, as well as promiscuity, and I can tell you it's benefited me at this point. So when we talk about how these different diets work, any kind of restriction works by reducing calories. Any kind of fasting window works by reducing calories. Calorie counting, funnily enough, reduces calories. Something like Noom, something like Weight Watchers. Anytime you have to track what you're eating, you reduce calories. And there's smarter ways to do this than others. For example, preloading with a huge salad is going to mean that you're eating less calories overall because you got fuller on a low calorie dense food. So your overall calories go down. There's lots of studies that support preloading is just a weight loss strategy. Real easy and simple. Just eat a huge salad or eat a big soup before you eat any other food. So that's a really smart way of doing a diet. A less smart way could be something like a fasting window. What quite often happens is people think that when I'm skipping breakfast, that I'm going to be eating less calories overall, or somehow it's magically going to work. It's not magical. But what happens is oftentimes people will eat more food towards the end of the day, or they will eat a lot of food in a very short window, a lot of high calorie dense foods because they got very hungry. So sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And that's where we've got to always ask the question, what's the best strategy in order to reduce calories, rather than thinking that there's some kind of specific secret that is necessary to actually get results. Blatant BS. So to summarize this, in terms of a lie, there is no secret to weight loss. We need to eat less calories. The best way, and this is supported by a lot of evidence, is when we reduce our overall calories by eating more low-calorie dense foods and less high-calorie dense ones. So we're trimming the fat effectively from both sides. We increase the amount of food that we're eating, which means that we feel fuller, more satisfied, and we're less likely to binge and we're more likely to stay consistent. Because you can imagine if you're eating half the amount of food that you normally would, which is what we do when we portion control, which is just another way to reduce calories, then if you've got a ton of willpower, it can work. But you're also more likely to be hungry. And when you're hungry, that hunger drive is going to take over. So if you can increase the amount of food that you're eating or keep it at least the same if you're happy eating that volume, then you're automatically more likely to reduce those binges and those higher calorie offenders that come from that kind of behavior. These are things like vegetables. Non-negotiable, eating a ton of vegetables every single day. I try to aim for about a pound. I also cook with a lot of veggies. I try and snack on as many veggies as I can. And this is one of the core tenets, if you will, of our program, is simply eating more vegetables and creating a habit around that. Because if you do, everything else falls into place. I've not really met, well, I shouldn't say that. It's very rare to see someone who is consistently eating a pound of veggies every day who is not losing weight, no matter what else is going on, because it is this cascading progress that happens when you start to actually implement this very, very core and easy habit. 1 pound of veggies a day. Simple. Done. Potatoes are a big part of this as well because they are very, very high in satiety. You can eat a decent amount of potatoes, or you can eat a reasonable amount of potatoes, let's say a pound, for about 400 calories. That's going to keep you very full for a long period of time. It's very hard to overeat on that. Whereas you think about if you were to make that a high calorie food by adding oil in what we do with fries or chips, as they're known here, then you're going to be able to eat 400 calories in about a handful because oil is so flippin' calorie dense. So if we remove the oil from that, we can eat more and we feel more satisfied. And the highest calorie foods on the planet are refined fats, oils, margarines, other high calorie foods, anything that is processed that has oil and sugar, because again, it's just been processed. There's no water or fiber in that final refined product. And really that's what makes anything low calorie dense, because it's so high in water and fiber. Think about veggies, they're 95% water. That's why you can eat a lot of them and you're not eating many calories, because you're literally just eating water with a lot of good nutrients in there as well. The second way the diet industry lied to us is telling us that our metabolisms are broken. And our metabolisms don't just break. And if they did, we'd starve. We wouldn't gain weight. Because broken means that we become less efficient. It means that we need more food in order to just maintain our weight. It means that we are struggling to keep weight on. That's what broken would look like. In fact, most of the time what people call sluggish or broken would be an evolutionary advantage. It would be a survival of the fittest advantage to be able to eat less food and maintain your weight or gain weight, because you're less likely to die out if there is a famine or there is a lack of food, which has been the case for most of human history. And it's kind of funny to me that we talk about efficiency in metabolism as a negative thing, when really that's the only reason that you're here listening to this, is because your ancestors have had an efficient metabolism. We really don't actually need that many calories. Like, it's kind of shocking when you look at it. Most of the longest living people groups on the planet eat under 1800 calories a day, and that's adults included, and they move a whole lot more than we do. So the average person, if they're not hugely muscly or if they don't have a lot of extra weight, they really don't need much, even adults who are moving. So this idea that we somehow can just break our metabolism, or our metabolism is broken from years of dieting, it's not supported by any kind of science. There is one study that is not a gold standard in terms of clinical trials and understanding like how this works, and it was a study that was done on people after they had been in The Biggest Loser, and it looked at the rate of their metabolism a few years after, and even after they'd lost weight, their metabolism appeared to be less efficient, it was harder for them to keep the weight off. Or I should say more efficient. No, it was more efficient. I'm getting even mixed up. It was harder for them to keep the weight off. Their metabolism appeared to be more what we would call sluggish than before they were in the program, or when they were first in The Biggest Weight Loss. So people will bring up that study and they'll say, well, this is evidence that our metabolism is actually slow if we diet. But there's a lot of problems with that theory, and there's a lot of problems with the way the study was done. It didn't take into account whether someone was in a calorie deficit when they were actually measuring that. And when we're in a calorie deficit, we're more likely, or our metabolism in terms of calorie burn tends to be lower. There's just a whole lot of issues with the way that it was actually designed, and there's so many other contradicting studies as well. This is again why I talk about the difference between looking at observations and looking at something, then looking at a scientific law. What we do know to be true is if you eat less calories than what you burn, you are going to lose weight. So more often than not, and what we do have evidence for, is that if you're not losing weight, most likely it's because of factors that are within some measure of control, or factors that you can't really do anything about no matter how much you try to increase. For example, most of your metabolism, 60% of your metabolism, is fixed. It is not influenced by you. It is not something that you can directly control. It's just the amount of calories that you burn through eating, breathing, blood pumping, all these other things. The other 40-ish percent is mostly to do with how much you move. So you can have influence on that. Fidgety people burn a whole lot more calories. It's the reason that we tend to gain weight as we age. Well, one of the reasons is because we tend to move less as we age. We also tend to have less muscle. So the more mass you have, if you're a bigger person, then you also need more calories. Someone who has a lot of muscle mass or someone who has a lot of fat is going to need more energy to power that body than someone who is very lean and small and petite. A lot of people think that their size and their age have the biggest influence on whether they need a lot of calories or a little bit of calories, or whether they're under or around that average or not. And the biggest thing that we see is that movement. Like, this is crazy to me, is movement has a bigger impact on your metabolism in terms of your overall calorie burn than with your age or your height or even your size. So I think that's really encouraging, that we're not a slave to just having a I'm not going to say slower because the terminology is misleading, but a smaller or a lower calorie burn. We're not all that disadvantaged, even if we do have an innately lower calorie burn, because we can move more. Like, everyone can move more. Everyone can become a fidgeter. Everyone can get 10,000 steps in a day. Everyone can get, well, not everyone, but we have the ability to get things like walking desks or move and build habits around movement. So I think that's really encouraging. The thing to understand, and I don't want to go really deep into metabolism as well, because it's kind of thrown out there as a reason why someone wouldn't lose weight. And we've really got to look at, it's so hard to explain this, but I hate it when people say, oh, my metabolism is broken, because you really have to quantify exactly what you mean when you use that statement. And a lot of people don't. Like, what the heck do you mean? Are you meaning that you're stuck in bed and you're now moving a whole lot less? Are you meaning that your cortisol levels are higher because you're really stressed and therefore you're actually eating more? Because that's the main thing that cortisol does to our behavior, is it causes us to actually have less inhibitions around food and then eat more. So what are people actually meaning? And I asked Michael Greger this as well when I did a podcast interview of him, because it's one of those things that comes up all the time. Why is it harder for some people to lose weight than others? And his response to me was, it was very clinical. It would probably come across as quite like a hard-hitting truth, but it was simply, some people eat more calories than others. And there are variants in how many calories we burn, but they're within the hundreds of calories. Like, they're not, it's not like someone needs 1,000 calories to survive and then someone else needs 3,000. There's a much, much shorter range than that. I've talked about this before. It's the same kind of thing where we look at shoe sizes. While we do have a range in people's feet, it's a range of a narrow window. You don't get someone with a foot size of 2 meters. You don't get someone with a foot size of 1 centimeter. It exists in this quite tight range of reality, and our metabolisms in terms of calorie burn are the same. The reason the diet industry loves this one is that if we can be convinced that our metabolism is broken, then we need some kind of special fix. We need some kind of special diet, some kind of special approach, some kind of supplement, some kind of new opportunity is what the marketing world calls this. Present a new opportunity. Because if you've tried everything before and then you get convinced, well, you know what? I just haven't tried this one thing that now has to do with my broken metabolism, then maybe that's going to work. It gives you hope, but it's a falsehood. It's not accurate. It's clever and it feels good because it feels like, well, maybe this is not my fault in a way. And I don't think that weight gain is someone's fault. Like, bear that in mind. I think there's a lot of factors that contribute to that. I think our environment is the biggest one. Just because it's not your fault does not mean that it's not our responsibility. And blaming it on metabolism and thinking some kind of pill is going to work is going to leave us in the same position as when we started. And I'm sorry, but that's the truth. And this plays into the third thing that the diet industry loves to tell us, and that is that we are special. Because if a metabolism is broken and we need some kind of special diet, there has to be some kind of secret to it. It's so mystical and you've got to sacrifice a newborn hedgehog at midnight on the third day of the month when who knows what, you can tell that this is not my thing. If it can tell us that, then it can present us some kind of tailored, special approach. Who likes to feel special? I like to feel special. I like when I see things that are tailored to me. I like it when I see a reel on Instagram and I'm like, that's so relatable. That's so me. And then I share it with my sisters. Or I send it to Nick. And he sends me a million ones that I just do not watch as well, because they're funny and they're relatable and I don't want to get sucked into that world. We all love that. We love to feel special. And so this is one of the easiest ways that we can be hooked, is that if we think that we are special, either because of our age, our size, our history, our hormones, our being a woman, having a cycle or whatever else thing. Who knows? Like endomorph, ectomorph, Pisces, whatever. If the diet industry can convince you that you're special and you need a special approach, then it's a very clever and appealing strategy to think, well, I just need to do this new thing. I think this is the reason that we're so attracted to people or gurus in positions of authority, because there's this idea, and I feel like I'm going to offend people, and I'm okay with that. Like I'm getting more okay with that, because this is what I believe to be true, is I think that we fall prey to people in authority when it comes to customized approaches, when it comes to specifically diet, because it makes us feel like change is more likely, because it seems more special. It's the reason that we're more likely to trust someone, and a lot of the time this is accurate, right? A lot of the time, like if you go see a specialist, a foot doctor, you're going to, or a neurologist, you're going to get a more specialized approach. You're going to get a more specialized idea of what's wrong than if you were to go to a generalist. And so when we think that our problems are unique and special, and here's the thing as well, let me just put a little bit of a proviso or preface on this. We think that our problems are special because we haven't solved them yet. Let me say that again. We think that our problems are special because we haven't solved them yet. Because if we've been trying to do this for years, most people, it's decades. For me, it was 10 years. A lot of the women I talk to, it is 30 or 40 or sometimes even 50. If we've been doing something, you think about this, if you've been doing something for 30 years, and you've put a ton of effort and money and sacrifice and hunger and eating gross foods and soup diets and going into Weight Watchers and being yelled when you hop on a scales. If we've put ourselves through that for that length of time and we haven't got a result, then it makes sense to think there's some kind of crazy, weird, special reason why we can't see success. So it makes sense that when these new fads come up, or when someone says to us, well, you've got this issue, or your metabolism has this, or because you're 56 and you were born at the stroke of midnight, you're going to meet a prince and the pumpkin is going to turn into a carriage and you're going to go to the fancy dress ball, and then when you lose the glass slipper, no, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I feel like I'm being very facetious here. But you get what I'm saying. And I have really felt this as well, because I really thought that I was broken for a long time, to the point where I would see Instagrammers and YouTubers eating the kind of foods that I do now and think that I was so broken, my metabolism was so messed up and so slow, that there was no way that I could eat like that and lose weight. And I'm very convinced that people, and maybe this is you, and it pains me, but it's also hopeful. I'm sure there are people who look at what I do now and what I eat in days and how I structure my life and the fact that I can eat pasta and bread and ice cream on occasion, not very often, but on occasion, and still maintain my weight loss, and that I lost 40 pounds without appearing to do really much exercise. I didn't. People will look at that and think that I'm a special unicorn, that there is something amazing to do with my metabolism. There is some kind of innate special quality that I have, or that they don't, that is making that possible and not for them. And it's not true. It's simply not true. You don't need a specific diet based on your blood type or your body type or when you were born or how old you are. And I know this one is going to rile more people than ever. If you're going through menopause right now, if you are a premenopausal or you're postmenopausal and you are struggling to lose weight, it is because you're eating more calories than you need. Or it is because you are eating more calories, or the same amount of calories if you're maintaining your weight, so that you can't actually dip into those stored fat cells. You do not need a special diet. You do not need a diet or an approach that is catered towards someone who is menopausal. You need the diet that is going to help you to get into a calorie deficit, and it may look slightly different. This is the part that is true. While We are not special. While our problems are not unique, we all think they are. We all think we're the magical unicorn. While that is the case, we all have a different starting point. And so the best way that I can describe this is to think about it as a spectrum. And what we tend to think is that there's a million different options. So if you were to pull out a piece of paper right now, or imagine me doing this, I pull out a piece of paper and I draw all these little dots on the paper. And what we think dieting is that there's like all these little dots out there and we've somehow got to find the right one for us. We've got to find that one that is going to magically work. Instead, imagine that there is a line. Imagine that I draw a long line on a piece of paper and someone is on one side of the piece of paper, plotted along, and someone else is towards the left. Someone's far on the right, someone's far on the left. Someone's in the middle, someone's just a little bit ahead of someone else. And so we all need to get into a calorie deficit. Potatoes are going to be amazing for everyone. Vegetables are a huge part of this. Lowering your calorie density is going to help you to reduce your calories. But how much you need to reduce your calories is going to depend on where you start from. How much processed food you can afford to eat while getting into a calorie deficit is going to depend on how much you're eating now, whether you're maintaining your weight, whether you are losing weight, how quickly you want to lose. All of those factors are going to influence where you are on that spectrum. And so if you are someone who is in that kind of menopause stage, which is highly targeted for weight loss, and do you want to know another reason that this is so targeted? Because it's a very profitable niche. Like, I hate to say that, but people who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s tend to have more of a disposable income to put towards dieting than people who are in their teens or in their 20s. Probably especially these days, honestly, because the younger generation with like house prices and inflation, they're kind of screwed. We will not go off on that tangent. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily wrong, because I believe that when we have a free exchange of value, money's a big part of that. Money's a big part of getting results because it's skin in the game. I'm very, very grateful for the things that I've invested in, the things that have helped me to grow as a person, and they were hugely valuable. I would not have seen them as valuable, and I would have not have treated them the same, and I would not have been able to get the same value had they have been free. But it is important to understand that there is a factor involved in this, and so sleazy marketers, or what I would call people who are going to capitalize on this when it is not true, are going to be targeting people in that menopausal phase, or the 40 to 60 phase. And like I said, one of the biggest things is that as we age, we tend to reduce our muscle mass and we tend to move less. So simply by moving less, we are disrupting whatever was the calorie balance that may have been fine or may have allowed us to maintain our weight a couple of years ago. Because if you are suddenly moving by hundreds of calories less a day, or it's not normally sudden, it's normally a creep, then you're not going to be able to eat the same amount of food and maintain the same weight that you did. You're going to gain weight because you've now got a surplus of energy because you're not burning as much energy as you used to. And this is really the biggest reason that people gain weight as they age. So we can control for that. We can move more and we can reduce our calories. There's also lifestyle factors that have to do with weight gain or weight loss. If you have kids that leave home and that changes your lifestyle, if you have got more disposable income because someone is older and they're now paying for themselves, like your kids leave to go to college or whatever, all these things that happen around this age that typically they just influence our behavior. And our behavior is always influenced, or our calories, I should say, are always influenced by subtle changes in our environment and our behavior. There doesn't appear to be really evidence, as far as I'm aware, and I could be really wrong on this. I haven't seen it, and there's this law or this razor that I think is really fascinating. This is Hitchens' razor, and it's basically a general rule for sieving out different claims, and it states that what can be asserted without evidence can be dismissed without evidence. And this is what it really implies is that there's a burden of proof when you're making a claim. And if there's no proof to making a claim, if it's not actually founded, then it can be dismissed equally easily. And you don't actually need any evidence to dismiss something. So this is, I think, my biggest thing when people talk about needing or having big changes in their metabolism or needing certain approaches when it comes to age, is that I personally have not seen the evidence for this claim. And I haven't seen many people put out strong evidence apart from those movement and environmental factors, muscle loss, all of those things when it comes to aging that are going to drastically affect this. And when it is affected, it's in the realm of hundreds of calories. Like, we do reduce our calorie needs as we age. Like, this is a known fact. I'm not debating that. We know that to be true. But we still don't need a specialized approach. We need an approach that is specialized in that we look at where we come from, our own individual starting point, and we look at what progress looks like for us from where we are. It's not one size fits all. It's asking, where am I on the spectrum and where do I need to make changes in order to reduce my calories? Because, and this is the coolest part about it, this is the thing that makes me really excited and what I love to do with our clients, is that if someone is binging every weekend, if they're drinking every night, or they're going out partying and there's pendulum swinging from extreme dieting to extreme not, then the amount of change that they're actually going to need to implement to start losing weight, if they're currently maintaining it with that kind of lifestyle, huge pendulum swings in calories, then it's not going to take much to lose weight, which is cool, right? You just have to make a few tweaks here and there. You just have to make a bit of improvements. Maybe you go out to drink once a week or twice a week, as opposed to 5-6 times. That's doable. You don't have to be 100% abstinent to make that happen. Someone else who is extremely strict with their diet, they work out and they move thousands and thousands of steps a day. They eat potatoes and broccoli every meal. They never have fats in their diet and they're still not losing weight. It's going to look different for them than the first scenario. But that's not because they need something different. It's because they're on a different spectrum. They're just at a different place in their journey. And they're going to have to do something more strict. They're going to have to reduce their calories further. And so this is a bit of a side note, is that traditionally diets work by getting us to do the thing that is going to help the lowest common denominator. Traditionally, when you join some kind of diet, you'll be given the frameworks that work for that person who is on the lowest end of the spectrum, who needs to be as strict as they possibly could be. Because what that guarantees is that everyone is going to get some kind of result. What it also means is that most people, the majority, who don't need that and who don't have the discipline and the trust in themselves to maintain that, are going to feel like they're failures. And this is what mostly contributes to us going and looking for millions of diets all the time. It's not that it didn't work, it's that we couldn't maintain it and it was too difficult. This comes into my second to last point. I think I merged two, so I think we're on number five. I merged age. Age is a big one. Age is a big target one. And then special diets. That's the other one. So we're on number five. And that weight loss should be quick. This is a very prevailing idea in the weight loss world. And this is where the lowest common denominator works on. It's why a lot of diets are around 1,500 or even less calories. It's why most diets are very strict. It's why people will say, well, during a dieting phase, don't have any alcohol. It's why some people will say, don't have fats in your diet. Because if you can give a tight set of principles or a tight set of rules, that if 99% of the people who do them actually do them or are trying to do them follow through on them, then they will see results. Because most people are going to lose weight if they are eating 1,500 calories a day consistently. Most people. Because that's much less than most people actually need, their bodies actually need to survive. So they'll get into a calorie deficit. And then we feel like failures because we don't stick to it. Whereas if we take a different approach, which is let's do the least that we possibly could do and still get results, what's going to happen? We're not going to see weight loss as fast because we're no longer going to the lowest common denominator, and we're now going to what is the absolute easiest minimum effort that I need to maximize my return on investment, my ROI. Love that word. Love that an acronym, whatever it is. And this is the very definition of working smarter rather than harder. Because when we work smarter, we're not reducing a ton of things. We're not making ourselves go hungry. But the trade-off to this is that there has to be some trial and error. And most people don't like that. And the reason that we don't like it is that we've been taught that if we don't see drastic loss on the scales over a course of a couple of days or a week, then something isn't working. And that's blatantly false. Most of the people who have lost weight and kept it off had not done that in a very, very quick way. They've done it in a consistent way. They've lost weight over the long term. Most of us, it's going to take a year or more, not just to lose the weight, but to actually maintain that loss and build the habits required to keep it off. And if you're listening to this podcast, I'm really hoping that you're the kind of person who's thinking about this. And I'm going to bet that you are, because you're here, you're listening to this. You could be listening to anything else. You could be doing some kind of fad and you're not, you're here. So you're the kind of person who is thinking about weight loss in terms of not just this year, but next year and when you are 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. And this is something that shifted for me as well. As I got to this point where I realized, even if I was to lose all the weight that I needed to, 40 pounds in 6 months, which would have been hell to actually follow through and do, if I then gained it back over the next 6 months, which meant that I was in exactly the same position I was a year later because my habits did not support the way that I had lost it, then I didn't want it. I did not want to lose weight that fast. So I had to shift my thinking from, I want to lose this weight as fast as I possibly can because then I know that it's working, to I want to build habits that I can maintain for the rest of my life that are going to predictably lead to results, things like eating that pound of veggies, reducing the binges by choosing a next best option, not pendulum swinging between a total blowout because you feel like a failure because you hopped on the scales and it fluctuated up, which is normal, and then going and giving up on your diet or being perfect with your diet and then you know it. You've probably done it. I've done it. We've all done it. And instead going, what can I do for the rest of my life? And I can tell you what, like I've talked about this a million times. It's not rocket science. You can go do my mini course if any of this is like, well, I don't know what to do. Go do my mini course. I outline the exact frameworks that I use in order to make this happen. It's just doing it. And it's just doing it consistently. That's really what the hard part is. 1 to 2 pounds of weight lost a week is perfectly normal for sustainable weight loss. When I say sustainable, I'm not meaning that there's anything inherently wrong with losing weight faster. I'm meaning that most of the time, if we are losing weight faster than that, the behavior required to be in that much of a calorie deficit, because more of a calorie deficit means we're going to lose weight faster because our body's dipping into more of those stored fat cells in a shorter period of time. More often than not, that's going to be harder for us to maintain. So we jeopardize the longevity of that behavior when we try and speed it up. But if you are doing what you're doing and you're losing weight quick and you're able to maintain those habits and you're loving those habits, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. They just tend to go hand in hand. Quick weight loss tends to go hand in hand with unsustainable patterns and behaviors. But this is why it's so important to focus on leading rather than lagging measures of results. A leading measure is what you do to lose the weight. It's the pound of veggies every day. It's the consistent movement and walking. It's the prepping your veggies. It's the having potatoes ready to go. It's the putting aside time to prep some oats so that you've got a breakfast. It's having food in the car or a banana when you leave the house so that you don't go through the drive-through. It's all of those little behaviors and creating those routines. Those are the leading measures of success. If you are to do those things, then you cannot help but be successful once you've built those habits. Weight loss will follow. It's predictable. It's always going to happen at some point. It may take a little bit longer than what you think, and it's going to take conceivably longer than what we'd like to actually build those habits, because habit building is a lifelong process. But that's going to lead there. Whereas if we focus on lagging measures, which is just the weight on the scales or how our clothes fit, then we can have all kinds of extreme behaviors to get there, but it doesn't mean that they're actually going to last. Behavior is what leads to results. Behavior and habits are what lead to those results being actually sustained. So we need to focus on the leading, not just the lagging. And the same is true for anything. If you want to be ripped, you're going to have to work out for years. If you want to work out for years, you're going to have to build a gym habit. This is much more important. It's much more important to actually get to the gym on a consistent basis and build that muscle of getting there, getting out of bed, putting on your gym clothes, walking in the front door, then it matters what actual exercises you do once you're there. Can you see how this works? You've got to have one before the other. You can't optimize something that doesn't exist. You can't optimize for a race where you never put your shoes on. You can't have the optimum diet for your blood type when you're binging every weekend. It doesn't work that way. Like, I think if we use a bit of common sense, we know that. The final point is that exercise is the most important factor for weight loss. And I would say that this is less about the diet industry and more about the fitness industry, in that we see people who are fit, who are strong, who look like we want to look, and they're doing a ton of exercises. They're doing ab workouts. They're doing some kind of thigh thinning, weird, I don't know, some kind of thing. And we think that if we do those things, we're going to look like them, which is not the case, because we must be in a calorie deficit to lose weight. And exercise doesn't actually help us do that. Most of the time, cardio at least causes us to be more hungry and to move less when we're not doing it. So if we burn 300 calories in a hard workout and then we move 200 calories less than normal, we sit on the couch, we fidget less, we go to bed earlier, whatever it is, and then we're also hungry and we eat 200 calories more because of that, then the net effect is that we're 100 calories up from our normal base. And this happens all the time. It's a big reason why a lot of people do actually gain weight when they start to exercise more. And it doesn't mean that exercise is wrong. Exercise is amazing. We all should be exercising. It just means that we can't rely on exercise as a predictable means of weight loss, because the amount of calories that we can burn, even in a hard hour of physical intensity, is very small compared to how many we can shove in our mouths in 5 minutes flat. We can shove thousands of calories in our mouths in a very short period of time. It takes an inordinately greater amount of effort to actually burn those off, and then we've got the rest of the day to consider as well when we're actually moving less and eating more. So use exercise as a tool for increasing your cardiovascular health. Use it to build lean muscle. Use it because it is incredibly beneficial to our overall well-being. Use it for your mental health. I exercise and I try to move on a daily basis. I try to build muscle. If you build more muscle, then it's going to be easier to actually maintain your weight as well. It is a part of the weight loss journey. That is not deniable, but it is not the biggest factor in it, and it can be a hindrance when we use it as the biggest toolkit. And this is, it's just simply not the case. There's a lot of evidence that goes into this as well. So what does work? We've talked about all these lies. We've talked about all the things that the diet industry has tried to tell us. The overarching theme to always be on the lookout for, and I love this, It's actually a Bible verse, but it says to be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves. I think it's gentle, I was going to say soft, but gentle as doves. And I like that kind of analogy where we're looking at this with shrewdness, and we're looking at it in terms of aware of these different strategies that are used, but we're not coming into it with cynicism. Because like I've said, there's nothing wrong with a free exchange of value. There's nothing wrong in my opinion. You may think differently. This is my opinion. I'm allowed to have it. I don't think there's anything wrong with the fact that this is an industry. I don't think there's anything wrong with an attempt to solve a problem that so many of us have. The issue is that when there are tactics and we are influenced by things that are simply not true, then we're going to be falling victim to them time and time again. So when we really think about it and we really look at this, like I said, the overarching theme is that we are not special. It's this whole supers thing. Like, I don't know if you've seen, I think everyone at this point has seen The Incredibles. And there's that line, it's like, if everyone's super, no one will be. And it's that same kind of thing. Like, everyone's special, but no one's special. It's like, we're all special, but no one's special. We don't need special attention. We're much more on a spectrum. What we do need to look at is not the new problems, not the things that, oh, like, maybe it's my blood type. Maybe it's my age. We need to look at the old problem. We need to look at the problem that has been there since we entered this world and we were crying out from the moment that we took first breath. And that is that we are inherently influenced by hunger. We are mostly a product, or we are influenced by our environment, and we are influenced by our impulses. And that if you give a chocolate bar to kids, whether they are hungry or not, they will most likely eat the whole thing and then feel sick. It's this lovely idea to think that we can somehow just regulate, and just somehow, if we had this magical diet and we had the magical calorie number that we needed, that we'd follow through and do it. If we really think about this, if we really got honest with ourselves, we'd know that most of our issue is that we kind of know what to do, we just don't do it. That when there's cake there and it's offered, we'll eat it. When someone says, hey, do you want to come out to a restaurant? We do it. And we don't bring food with us because we don't want to be embarrassed. When our mother-in-law brings over a meal that we're trying not to eat, we don't have a conversation because we don't want her to say, oh, well, you're on another diet. That when our teenagers bring home snacks or they ask us to buy things, we still bring them into our homes because we don't want to be the bad guy. If we were to come back to that idea of weight loss being a spectrum and what we need to do in order to be successful as a spectrum, I tend to look at this in terms of two camps. The first camp is that we need to understand, or the first step in progress is understanding that we need what we need to do in order to be successful. That we need to eat less calories. That's a fundamental. And we then need to know how to actually do that. And that's why I put out my free mini course. That's why I put out the free content that I do on places like YouTube and Instagram. As you've probably seen, this podcast is much more conceptual. It's much more about habits, because I believe this is the most important part of that. Once we understand what to do and that we need to eat potatoes and broccoli and that we probably should stop eating so much cake, the really difficult thing that we're all going to struggle with is actually implementing it. That's the hard part. The what to do is easy. You can learn that in an hour. I learned that in a couple of hours when I first figured this out. Once I got over myself and realized that calories did matter and that I wasn't special and that I wasn't broken, I kind of figured out what I needed to do in a very short space of time. In terms of actually doing it, not only do we have to know how to make changes, we've got to put them into practice. We've got to actually pick up the knife, cut the broccoli, put it in the fridge, have those hard conversations, bring food with us, be the weirdo, fail, pick ourselves up, do it all over again, not give up when the scales goes up, and actually do that. Like, that's the thing. That's hard. And you know what? This is not sexy, because it's not a quick fix. You're not going to see a lot of marketing around changing your habits and implementation, because it's so much easier to say, here, take this pill. It's so much easier and more attractive to say, hey, you know what? You're broken, or your metabolism needs this specific diet because you're now 50 years old, than it is to say, you know what? You need to have a hard conversation with your husband. You need to buy more vegetables, and you need to say no to your teenagers. You need to get some of that food that's currently in your environment out. You need to actually invest in accountability or a community. Or you got to do something different. Maybe you've got to get a whole new group of friends in order for this to become normalized. Like, those things are flipping hard. No one in their right mind would want to be saying that this is the way to do it. Here I am. But I'm so behind this because I know that it works and I know that it changes lives. So with all this being said, the most important factor here is to really get an idea of what is your biggest obstacle. And if your biggest obstacle right now is just simply knowing what you need to do to be successful, then I'm plugging it, but I have nothing to gain from this apart from to help you is please do the free mini course that I put out. And if you're struggling with implementation, then behavioral change tools that are outlined in places like Atomic Habits, in this podcast, and if you're needing help to do that, then I'd love to invite you to work with us or to see at least if you're a good fit. We don't work with everyone. We want to work with people who are focused on long-term change, not just fast fads. If that sounds like you and you want that personalized help to actually implement it, then we'd love to be able to do that. And you can have a look in the description, book a call with us, see if you're a good fit, see how we can help you. And even if it doesn't work out in terms of working together, I know you're still going to find that incredibly valuable to know where to put your focus. And one of the action points from this is that I'd like you, if you're going to really take action, because action's the only thing that gets us results. We can listen to a million podcasts, read a million books, and know what we need to do. We can have a million recipe downloads and pins on Pinterest and still not see success. What I want you to do is to get out a piece of paper, bear with me, and I want you to write on there two sides of the equation. The first one is knowledge. On one side of the paper is knowledge. On the other side of the paper is implementation. Implementation is doing the thing. Knowledge is knowing what to do. And I want you to draw a little line or draw a little dot in where you think you are in terms of either you need more knowledge or you need more implementation. And remember that they always move. Knowledge always moves towards implementation. And then I want you to ask yourself, well, if I need more of one of these things, what's my next step to do that? Is it something that's been talked about in this podcast? Or is it something that I need to go and figure out on my own? I'd love to know. I'd love you to send me a DM. Like I said, like all of these frameworks, all of these resources, they're things that I endeavor to put out there for free every single week so that there is absolutely nothing that you could possibly be missing in terms of knowledge and in terms of how to actually apply this. So please check out those resources. But what that does is it gives us clarity that we have to do things a different way. We cannot just fall victim and allow ourselves, because now it's a choice. If you know this, now you've got knowledge. Now you've got knowledge that it's not your metabolism, it's not your age, it's not that you're special, it's not that it's not working because it's not quick enough. It's not that you're not doing enough exercise or the right kind of movement. It is simply that you are not in a calorie deficit and most likely struggle with consistency like we all do. Now that you know that, the real question is, what are you going to do differently? I'll leave it there and I'll leave you with that. I hope that you found this helpful. And like I said, if you need more help, then please reach out to us. You can see the information in the description. That is what we do best is implementation. Not super sexy, but it really, really works for people that want to have this be the last diet that they do rather than doing this for the next 30 years. And if you like this podcast, please consider giving it a rating on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps to get the message out to more people. And I wanted to actually read a review that I got this week because I found it so flippin' inspiring. This is from Jill. She said, "Listening to this podcast and watching Chelsea's YouTube videos has completely changed my life. I have lost 84 pounds now and completely turned my health and future around because of the knowledge and wisdom she's shared around not only nutrition, but also behavioral change. I'm always re-listening to old podcasts if I'm starting to feel a bit lost or off track. I'm so grateful to Chelsea for putting this out into the world. I cannot recommend this podcast enough and to everyone that I can." So thank you so much, Jill, and this really helps. It helps me, it makes my day, and I really appreciate that. I want to keep this an ad-free space, and like I said, I've said this so many times, and I just want to reiterate it just one more time, is that I truly believe that knowledge should be free, that we all should have had access to this information many, many years ago, and that we've been hoodwinked by an industry that continues to lie to us and tell us that we're victims and that we're broken and that we need these special things. And it frustrates me so much because it really is very simple. And I feel so grateful now to know that I want everyone to understand that. You should never have to pay for knowledge, which is why I will never hold anything back from you, because I don't believe that that is the case. When it does come to implementation, though, that is something that requires investment, because it requires another person to help you. It requires having a community. It requires having someone who is going to help pull you up when you are down. It requires having something that is more than knowledge. It requires a whole lot more than that. And it is not something that can be free, unfortunately. Like, I wish that it could. It always takes some kind of resource. So that's why, that is the biggest reason that I feel like I can give every single thing away for free and still be able to do this as a living, is that I get to help people to implement things. And that's what our program is all about. So just putting that out there, share the word, spread the word if you like the podcast, because it really does help. And I will see you next week for another one. And if you have any ideas of what you want me to cover, then let me know. I'd love to hear it. All right, this really is goodbye. Bye.